You're listening to the Hope Shot Recovery Podcast.
What's up, everyone? Welcome back to the Hope Shot. Hope you guys had a great weekend. If you guys just jumping on, say what's up. Let us know you're here. Cesar.
Would you like me to read the clarity statement? Is that what you're saying?
No, I just like saying your name.
You know what I mean? It's good talking to you. Let me mute myself.
All right, see ya. All right, Nate.
Clarity statement.
Nate has found the magic trick. Just to let y'all know, and there's probably going to be a bunch of it.
I feel like Neo in the Matrix.
Sorry, Joe.
All right. Hope Shot clarity statement. We here at the Hope Shot are a group of people in recovery, spreading inspiration. We come from all different walks of life and pathways of recovery. Our verbiage may be different at times, but we all have one thing in common. Recovery is a lifestyle. We support all pathways of recovery. It doesn't matter how you get from A to Z, just get there. And thank you for being a part of our Hope Shot family.
Thanks, Caesar. Fireworks, Caesar. It's magical. Nate, you want to explain the topic for tonight?
I'm starting.
You've been.
If I explain the topic, it'd probably be way off. Just to let y'all know.
All right. So am I explaining the topic or do you want me to share as well?
Hold on. Both. Here, I'll tell you what.
Both. Well, both.
You go ahead. I'll read the quote. You kick it in. I'll read the quote and then you go.
Okay. Yeah. So the topic today is contempt prior to investigation. Basically, it's these preconceived notions, these prejudices that we have prior to getting into recovery. Probably had them before we got into recovery. It's just an idea that something doesn't work without ever really trying it. Go ahead, Caesar.
All right, so the quote is, there's a principle, which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. And that's by Herbert Spencer.
And real quick before you start sharing, I want to shout out our special guest, Joe. We got Joe D in the house tonight to join us for this contempt prior to investigation.
I'll take it out. Why not?
Full set.
Yeah, so this is a really important topic because this very thing is what kept me sick and suffering for so many years. This very idea that recovery doesn't work, or there's so many prejudices and things I held in contempt prior to coming into this deal, because I assumed there, I had a bunch of assumptions about what recovery was. And my ideas of it was, first of all, y'all were lame. You guys were uncool. I'm so cool though. Walking around with borrowed clothes and borrowed money and no hope and no job and no car, but you guys in recovery, man, you guys were the squares. I couldn't conceive of not only joining or associating with you, but anything you had to say, I immediately judged before it came out because I had this idea of what it was. And furthermore, I had no inclination or no desire to even investigate or to even go further. And I think a lot of that has to do with when you're ready type deal. But this is the very thing that can literally kill us, you know, because if I would just had laid down my preconceived notions, my false ideas of what recovery was, because I just thought, how could anything in this world give me the feelings I felt when I was getting loaded? Like that was my solution. That solved all my problems, right? And I just couldn't conceive of any worthy substitute. And the only way that I could get to a point where I was willing to give it a chance or to just throw a Hail Mary and try it, regardless of what I thought, was desperation. I had to get to a point where I was just completely beaten up in so much pain and there were no other options. And it was nothing anybody could really tell me. It's nothing my family could tell me. It's nothing the judge could tell me. It's nothing me losing my daughters. It's nothing me going to prison. There was no lesson like pain and desperation. That was the ultimate catalyst. That is what just ripped the scales off my eyes and allowed me to see clearly for the first time. And what happens is in that moment of surrender, there's that little brief window where I'm like, maybe I am worth it. Maybe I do deserve something else. But it is only through that pathetic, desperate longing for something other than what else, whatever I've been settling for so many years, it's only in that space where I can say, hey, let me try something different. I'm out of options. I'm out of ideas. I have no plans, no schemes. Yeah, no idea of what to do next. And in that space, I can finally take a chance. So what happens is I get into this, and what I start discovering is that all of these things that I scoffed at, that I made fun of, that I judged, all of these things, all the sayings, one day at a time, and, you know, easy does it, and all these little cliche bumper sticker type sayings are the ultimately end up being the cornerstone of my recovery. And they form the foundation on what I stand on today. But how do you get to that point, right? How do I get to that point of becoming open-minded, to being receptive to something different? And like I said, it was only through the pain. That's what got my foot in the door. And then once I was here and I started doing the work and I started surrendering and I started taking suggestions, I found out that my life is just a pattern of running away from whatever I'm afraid of and being overwhelmed or getting paralyzed and stuck when something is new, unfamiliar, scary, something I'm not good at immediately. I want to just cast aside. I'm terrified of it, right? I can get stuck. And that's what early recovery would to me. That's what it was like to me. It was one of the most scariest times I've ever experienced because, you know, my solution was gone. And now I'm looking for something of equal or greater value. And I have no idea what that looks like. But thank God for like the fellowship, for friendship, for guidance, because I get surrounded by some men who show me how to live again. You know, they show me what it means to truly surrender, to get into this work. And in the process of going through the steps and starting to give this message back, I just uncover like this limitless wealth of spiritual tools and just a different way to live. I can't even explain it any better than that. And what I see is, especially as the years go by, is how conditioned I was. Like I hold on to these old ideas, right? And I don't know where I got a lot of these ideas. Maybe some from my family, some from MTV, some from Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Who knows? I was, you know, inundated with TV and movies growing up, right? So I have all these, you know, ideas of what my life is. And the lens I see through is filled with insecurity, fear, social anxiety, wanting, comparing myself to others. And I have to start working internally so I can start to see externally a little better, right? And as I'm doing the inside work, my perspective shifts and I'm able to finally see the world for what it is. And it's not that everybody's out to get me. It's not that it's dog eats dog, nice guys finish last, all this bullshit that we hear. It's not that being vulnerable is a weakness or crying is soft or any of this stuff that I believed growing up. And I have to truly like lay aside all my prejudice and start anew. And most importantly, and this will be the last point I want to make because I really want to hear what everybody else has to say about this, is I truly have to lay aside my prejudices when it comes to spirituality, right? Because I come into this, you have the Catholic with the priest and all that. You know what I'm talking about, all that madness. You have the Muslim religion, 9/11, you know, I'm thinking religion's fucked, right? I don't want no part in any of that. No. And that's what I associate spirituality with, organized religion. And I get to this fellowship and they tell me, hey, bud, choose your own God. Imagine that. I get to choose who I want to believe in. And that right there is the single most important factor of this thing that I get to be involved in today. I got to choose who I believe in. I don't have to go to a church. I get to build my own church, right? I get to figure out what it means to build a relationship with a God of my own understanding. And in that relationship is where I truly start to experience freedom. And what I discover is that my concepts are ever evolving. And in order for me not to become stagnant in this deal, I was just talking to my girlfriend about this today. I want to be like a newcomer. I want to have that eager willingness to continually seek and redefine what spirituality means to me, what my relationship to God is, and how I see that relationship and that power manifest into my life. But before I get all of this madness and chaos and guilt and shame and resentments and fears and insecurities, yada, 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 before I get that out of me through this beautiful process that is laid out before me, I'm unable to see these things. And I judge stuff because I'm terrified of it. I'm afraid of it. But I promise you, and I say this all the time, man, everything I resist or that I hold in contempt before I try it, everything that I'm like unwilling to do or walk through, whatever that looks like, there are the greatest blessings on the other side of that resistance, always just waiting patiently for my dumbass to catch up, to get out of my own way, to trust. And of course, man, you come into this, I don't have trust. I don't know what trust is. I don't believe in myself. How can I believe in something outside of me? I don't believe in friendship. I haven't had these experiences. I haven't had healthy relationships. I haven't had healthy friendships. I haven't had a real job. And I sure as hell haven't had no connection to a higher power, let alone a relationship with it. So, but in this process, when I'm being introduced to these things and I start to form a relationship, I'm finally, it's like the veil has been lifted and I'm able to see things clearly for the first time. And then, and only in that space of like true humility, that I am not in control, that I really, my ideas don't amount to much, and left to my own devices, I'm pretty fucked. If I can stay in that state of humility and I'm able to stay open-minded, teachable, you know, you hear it all the time, remain teachable. I didn't understand what that meant. And today I know that it's one of the most important factors in my recovery, because as soon as I think I have it figured out, I'm in trouble. Because I don't want to have it figured out. I don't want the answers. I want to continuously ask for guidance, not only from my higher power, but how my higher power manifests in my life, which is through the fellowship, through strangers, through people, places, and things, if I am open enough to receive the message. How do I get open enough? I have to do things on a daily basis to can have a conscious contact. I have to have this relationship. I have to nurture this relationship. I have to stay busy in my recovery, busy in my prayers, busy in my meditation, in order for me to be able to see clearly, to remain open-minded, to give stuff a chance that I've never done before. I want to try new things. And if I judge it before I ever do it, how am I ever going to learn anything new? If you're just coming in here and you're like, man, these guys are full of shit. Guess what? I thought the same thing. I thought you guys were full of shit. I thought you guys were just running some kind of game and, you know, there was some type of thing on the back end. That's how I saw everything in life. This recovery deal wasn't no different. But I promise you, if you stick around and get honest and get vulnerable enough and take suggestions, that whole perspective will shift. And it transformed my entire life. It has truly given me a second opportunity to live and create this beautiful life. And I'm just so very grateful for the topic. I'm so grateful that I want to remain open-minded, that I want to have that true humility where I can give stuff a chance before judging it or scoffing it or just running in a different direction. But I can only be in that space if I'm doing the things that connect me to this power and staying connected to my fellows, so you guys can tell me and that power can work through them and others. It's truly a magical deal. Very grateful, blessed to be here. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Nate. Yeah, it's a Ponzi scheme, bro. It's a Ponzi scheme. This whole thing is a Ponzi scheme. That's what it comes up with in my mind. Everybody's full of shit. This ain't real. I don't know what it is, but I'm gonna find out.
Dude, man, if I was being honest, until stuff got bad enough, I thought that this stuff was for just like losers that couldn't figure it out. I was like, man, you got to be pretty lame to do these 12-step things. Like, I'll figure it out. And I was like 20. And then I was like 30. Right. 35. I was like, oh my God, I'm not figuring it out. Maybe these guys were onto something.
Yeah. No, yeah. They are onto something. What's up, Joe? Thanks for coming on tonight.
No, what's up, Hope Shot? I was a grateful guest, first time on the show, and I wanted to comment. First, I want to answer the question, the clean date. My clean date's October 1985, and I remember coming 2 years prior to that, I went to a detox, and they were giving me benzos, and I was drinking iced tea and eating bologna sandwiches, dying to get out of there, and it was a Catholic hospital, so there was a nun there. And she was busting my ass the whole time I was sitting there. And I'm like, what is wrong with this lady? She's religious. She said, you can't see the forest from the trees and blah, 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 and all this and that. And I was like, man, I just got to get out of here. You know, the next day the counselor came in. And I said, what's up with that nun, man? She's awfully rude. And she said, maybe she just told you something you didn't want to hear. And I just blew that off. AA and NA would come into the detox. And it was like a free forum. So, you know, I saw somebody come in that I knew that I was using with, and I'd wonder what had happened to them. And they were in there and they started telling me about going to meetings, not picking up, being involved with this large fellowship and blah, 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 blah. And I wasn't feeling none of that. And so I went to a meeting. They had it in the basement of the hospital. And then when I got out, I went to another meeting and I met a bunch of people and folks were talking about being arrested and just some broken relationships, and I wasn't identifying. So I compared myself out, and I left that meeting. And 2 years later, I was arrested for interstate drug trafficking, possession with intent to deliver and manufacture. I was jobless. I was not homeless because I had family that would, I had enough recovery capital that I could still maintain and sustain. But people were 12-stepping my family, and I didn't know that. I just had a newborn son. And my wife and I would go out for a walk and then would come back. And then my mom was going, oh, so-and-so was here. They were talking about you and, you know, this other stuff, you know, and they were basically explaining the game I was running on. And it still didn't make me want to stop, but things got bad. My wife went into detox and I knew that experience of just that brief contact with 12-step, and it was Narcotics Anonymous and Alcoholics Anonymous, that I went back. And I attended a meeting and I said, well, I'm just going to do this, get these folks off my ass, and another 2-3 weeks, I'll be on my way. And something happened, which I had no, it was not my intention to stick around. And I went to a meeting, and then the next night I went to another meeting, and as I put one day back of another, and next thing you know, I got about 9, 10, 11 months. I'm from Pennsylvania. I saw somebody on the call, Washington, PA. And I say, shout out to Pennsylvania. And I went to a clubhouse. And, you know, I was doing stuff. I was staying away from people, places, and things. I had a sponsor. I had a home group. I was taking people to meetings. I was doing 12-step calls. My whole life was centered in recovery. And I started to develop this cocky message, like I was doing something. And I had talked my friend into going to treatment. And I was chomping at the bit, waiting for him to get out. And he comes home, we start going to meetings, we go to the big Saturday night meeting, I'm shooting my mouth off. And this old timer, he had a real benevolent, kind man. He walked up and went, hey, Joe, he said, sounds like you're on the fence. And I was like, on the fence. I said, doing all this stuff. He said, part of surrender is giving up your opinion and your judgment. And I think that kind of leads into contempt prior to investigation. And, you know, I thought I had this. It was like that I was on this fast track to recovery. And little did I know, you can't speed up the process. And that sets you up for blind spots. I didn't want to hear what he had to say. I ran to my sponsor and he said, is any of it true? And I'm like, I started to feel this like walls caving in on me. I thought I was doing so well. And I'm like, this is what's happening to me. And God was doing to me what I couldn't do for myself. He was putting people in my life, in my pathway that were saying stuff to me that were forcing me to take a look at myself. And I don't know if that's part of come to believe power greater than myself restores me to sanity. I think that's part of that. But I think a major part of it was this enormous group of people and experience was like just encompassing me. And when you put yourself in the midst of that, sometimes you either accept it or you run. And for some reason, I wasn't running. I started to accept that I needed to have that part of my recovery needed to be expanded on was humility, and that I didn't know everything. And I heard a comedian somewhere at a convention say, my first thought's usually wrong. So eliminate that off your list. Whatever pops into your mind first is probably based off of emotion and stuff like that. So I really appreciate the comment because I was during COVID, I was doing an all recovery meeting. I picked that out as the topic. That's not a very popular topic because people are like, they don't want to do any kind of self-investigation and like inventory. And what do I need to change? How can I improve on what I'm doing and the way I'm living? So I think it's very important to be able to share my strengths, my weaknesses, my assets, and my liabilities. You know, my sponsor, he's still my sponsor today, and he used to share with me his stumbles in life or what he did wrong or he had to go make an amends, do a 10th step or something like that. I'd be like, I couldn't conceive that because I was trying to hide who I was and I didn't want anyone to know that I made mistakes. Or if I did make a mistake, heaven forbid, I had to go back and tell somebody, hey, I screwed up. I said some inappropriate things or I acted in a way that's not conducive to the lifestyle I'm trying to live. And it's all unfolded pretty good for me. I could over three, almost four decades of my life have been this journey of ups, downs. A lot of times where things were flat and I would think there's nothing happening. What am I supposed to be doing? My life's mundane and boring. Sometimes that's a good thing, especially when you have other people in your life. Now I have a full life. I live in Melbourne, Florida now, and that's how I met Nate and Justin over at. I work in the recovery field. I'm a person in long-term recovery, so I help to engage folks in this multiple pathways to recovery. And that's one of the things that I could not wrap my head around 1, 2, 3, 5 years in recovery. This is the way, and if you don't do it this way, you're not going to make it because it was that dogmatic. And I think over the years, folks have realized that certain people can adapt this right away and weave it into the fabric of their life. And other people, it takes a different modality or just a different pathway or a different voice or just not what I do. But the end result's the same. You have a self-directed life. You're living much better than you ever thought you could. And I think it all works. I'm thankful that I've come to a point where I've grown enough to accept that. So I'll shut up. But thanks.
I love that, Joe. And it's cool that you got almost four decades a lot of old timers, they will not budge from the facts, right? The contentment prior to investigation is something that they're just set in their ways. And sometimes that works for them. On this grand scheme of things, we need to nurture whatever way that works. Because this day and age, it ain't like it was in the old school. You know what I mean? Thanks for coming on tonight, Joe, and sharing. I appreciate you, man. It's so good to finally get you on here. All right, Caesar.
All right, Justin.
Okay, man. Like, just calm down, okay?
So, I remember hearing this quote in meetings long before I actually took this deal seriously, and I was like, that's not me. I'm not that guy. But the same person saying that, I think, I don't know how many court-ordered meetings, four rehabs, outpatients, all these things. And these guys would come in, and they were offering a solution for free. They're bringing these meetings in, both fellowships. And I just looked at, oh, that's great for you guys, but that has absolutely nothing to do with me. That's not going to work for me. And that is the definition of contempt prior to investigation. Now, you can read the quote to me, but it didn't penetrate my thick skull. That was exactly what I was doing. And then you fast forward a little bit, and I remember this guy sat me down, and he was asking me about my drinking and my drugging. And he's like, well, that's not so much your problem. He's like, that is what you use to cope with your problem. And now I'm like, this guy's got a drug problem, clearly, because he's talking craziness. I was like, I definitely have a drug problem and a drinking problem and a getting arrested problem. He's like, no, you're suffering from a spiritual malady. I'm like, spiritual malady? What are you talking about? And, you know, my mind just shut off at that point. I didn't hear anything else he said after that because it sounded hokey and it sounded just ridiculous to me. But I didn't know what I didn't know, and I wasn't willing to learn anymore because I still had that last little bit of fight in me that I'm going to figure it out. I don't need y'all's help. I'm definitely not going to sit in these meetings like you losers. Like, I'm not going to do that. I'll figure out a better way to do it. And I tried that. We were talking a little bit before the show. I tried that when I was in my 20s. Tried that when I was in my late 20s. Tried it in my early 30s. Tried it after every rehab. And eventually, I was 37, sitting in a rehab with a bunch of 18 and 20-year-olds. I'd just gotten out of another jail where they knew me by name when I walked in and out. Like, booking knew me by name. The work pod, everyone in there knew me by name. And I'm like, this ain't working. This is not working for me. And I finally asked for help. And I know I punctuate it with this every time I say it, but I asked for help and I didn't dictate what the help looked like. I didn't go, listen, I need help, but here's the kind of help I need. I didn't do that. I said, listen, I heard you speak today and you shared suffering. You shared loneliness. You shared all these feelings that I'm going through right now. Guilt, shame, remorse, and just, you talked about this obsession in your mind. I still had that obsession. I still had that mind that was like, maybe I can do this successfully somehow. And I got honest with this guy and I told him, how did you go from that to this calm, peaceful, jovial, full of joy, laughing when he's telling the stories, these horror stories about how he used to live? And I'm like, I want that. I want to be able to do that. And it took some phone calls. He gave me the little tester for the guy in rehab. Hey, if you can call me every day, I'll come pick you up. And I called and I called. And he came and picked me up and started taking me through some work. And I thought I knew, just from going to meetings and listening, I thought I knew what this process was. I thought I had an idea. Everything I thought was wrong. Like, everything that I feared, I didn't really need to fear. My reactions to everything in life leading up to recovery were fear-based. If I'm being honest with myself, I didn't want to ask for a sponsor because that sponsor was going to make me do stuff, and I didn't know what that stuff was, and I didn't want to do that stuff. I'd rather figure it out. Unfortunately, I couldn't figure it out. Or fortunately, whichever way you want to look at it. But if I could have figured out how to live, I wouldn't have been in that last desperate spot to be able to ask for that help. So It turns out I had to look inward. The last place that I wanted to look, like inside of me. So what you're saying is I'm the problem. Yeah, buddy, you're the problem. Crap. I can't just quit me. So I got to work on me. And anyone that knows me, especially my wife, I don't like to write. I don't like to sit and write out long stuff. Nathan's good at writing and expressing himself through that stuff. My wife is good at writing and expressing herself, pen and paper. I hate it. I'm like a, I don't know, 7-year-old that's just learning how to write. And I'm like, oh, that's terrible. I don't want to do this. But that's what he asked me to do, is to put my life down on paper and take a look at it. Judgment-free, just take a look at these things. And then he, mind you, I'm an extreme case. So this guy, he countered it with similar emotions and similar things that he went through like that. He couldn't really match the shit show that I was putting out there for him, but he could match it with things that he went through, things that he struggled with, the emotions, the guilt, and the shame that he went through with some of his actions. And it made me feel better as we talked about it out loud. And I shared things that I swore I would never share with anybody, you know, like some of my lowest points, my crimes and stuff like that, stuff that I hadn't gotten caught for, that kind of stuff. I shared everything. And the funny part was it had nothing to do with the actual things that I did and everything to do with the defects that I was acting on. Why did you do this? I don't know, man. I guess I was just a drugged out guy. No, that's not why you did that. You did this because you were afraid you weren't going to get it if you didn't do this. And you did that because you were afraid of this. And I'm like, crap. It's all fear. Everything I do is fear-based. Every reaction that I have is fear-based. And we joked around because like I had written out this list of character defects and we had talked about fears before. And like I did the basic caveman man answer, well, I ain't afraid of nothing. If you've been where I've been, you wouldn't be afraid of nothing either. Like, he wasn't talking about spiders or heights or anything. It was like, my whole life has been fear-based. The way I dress, the way I act, the reason that I tell lies, because I'm afraid that if you get to know the real me, you're not going to like me. And I want you to like me, even when I'm at my lowest. Please like me. I'm afraid I'm not going to fit in. All these things, it's this fear-driven life. And he pushed me, eased me, held my hand, and walked me into a faith-based life. Whatever that faith looks like for each person is different. But it's faith in more than myself, which is a good thing because I'm not that great. If I'm the end-all be-all, that's lame. So I put my faith in something bigger than myself. And the reason I say this whole process is because I turned my nose up to this thing without ever trying it. And the first time that I actually tried it and did it the way that it was laid out, I've been in recovery. I've been sober ever since, going on 10 years now. So that lesson has taught me being closed-minded to new concepts, to different ways of thinking, different religions, different foods, different anything. Look at Nate, different foods. I gotta stay open-minded, especially now. So say 5 years in, now almost 10 years in, the moment I think that I've got this thing licked and I know and I don't need to learn anymore, I'm right back to being screwed because I'm not teachable anymore. So every time that I go to a meeting and we open up our literature, and when I stay in the middle of the boat, when I stay talking to newcomers, I get this new experience out of it because I'm in a different point in my recovery reading those pages than I was the last time. I get a new message. I'm going through something different. I get a new hope. And I have to keep that mindset of staying teachable, staying green, basically, keeping it fresh, hearing new ideas and exploring the new ideas, hearing new concepts and being willing to look at them and not just go, well, I got this thing that's working for me. So whatever you got going on over there, that's great for you, but it won't work for me. That's the same thinking I had before I walked in the door, and I can't afford to put that in my life today. So do I still do it? Of course I still do it. Nate just made a face. I sent him a chicken tenders meme today because it's funny. We get comfortable and we get in our little cocoon of routine, and anything that doesn't fall in line with my little cocoon of my routine starts to look like work, and it starts to look like an inconvenience. And that's me sliding backwards into this lack of growth mindset that makes me stagnant, makes me vulnerable. Because once I stop learning, growing, doing the things that I need to do, I move farther and further from the herd. And for lack of a better analogy, the ones on the outside of the herd are the ones that get picked off. And I don't want to be that. I want to be right in the middle of the pack with the newcomers, with the old timers, with everybody. And I want to continue learning. And everything that I learn, I want to pass on to somebody else to be able to help them. And that's it. There's really no more to strive for than to continue gaining knowledge and passing this thing on, pulling people up behind as we walk forward. And there's really no, there's no greater joy in life. I think Justin and Nathan and I have talked for sure about, if you're basing your happiness on the next thing, the next external thing, you don't really have happiness. Because once you get it, you're going to look at something that's a little bit better than the one you just got, and it's going to be gone. So it can't be anything external that's going to be your joy. It has to be from inside. And if I want to get joy on the inside, that comes from helping others, period. I build good self-esteem by doing esteemable acts. I build crappy self-esteem by doing shady shit, cutting corners. That's all there is to it. I don't want to feel that way anymore. I keep pushing myself outside of my comfort zone, do things that I don't really want to do, because when I get on the other side of those things, I invariably find that I feel much better than when I don't face the hard things and when I don't push myself outside of this comfort zone that I live in. So it's a kick-ass topic because I feel like anybody in this deal can absolutely relate to the fact that at some point we looked at this thing and went, ah, and that ain't for me. They said spiritual. That's some monk stuff. They're levitating and I'm not interested. You know, I've had people knock on my door with that kind of literature and I hide because I don't want them to see me. But as soon as I dropped all those preconceived notions of what I thought I knew, that's when the growth happened. Once my ideas were pushed aside for new ideas. So that's all I got.
Awesome. Yeah, see there. The you hit on some really good topics, really good points, I should say, not topics, but really good points on all this. It brings me back to thinking like that terminally uniqueness, you know, that we all suffer from coming into this recovery. It's like, nobody knows what I've been through. This ain't going to work for me. Like, I've been through too much shit. I've been to prison too much. I've done too many drugs. I'm wired fucked up. It might work for them. It's never going to work for me. And that's what all this is pretty much, man, that contempt prior to investigation, instead of trying to see if maybe it might work, maybe, just maybe.
Dude, it might work. It's hilarious, though. Like, at one point, I was like, man, I'm not as bad as these people. I don't got to come in here and do this crap. Look, at these people are really messed up. You fast forward a few years later, and I'm like, I'm way worse than these people. They can't fix me. You know what I mean? So it's like, you can't win either way. I'm like, I'm either too far gone or I'm a little bit better than you. But either way, I wasn't hearing what they were offering.
Yeah, because you should just shut off. Just shut off from what they're trying to offer. I already know. I don't need any more information. I got it. I'm gonna share them and then I'm gonna read some comments. But that's pretty much my whole life, man. I'm a know-it-all. I know it all. You can't tell me shit. I've got everything on my own. I'm independent to a fault. I needed to take suggestions. I needed to deflate my ego, because even in my weakest of times, my ego was so inflated. And I don't know how that was, but it was. You can't tell me nothing, because I had all these these resentments towards people, towards the people that have done me dirty, my childhood, my parents, everything. And I took all those and put it with these. So you couldn't tell me nothing because I already have this thing about who you are, right? You're already like done in my book, right? And that's another thing I try to work on these days when somebody like gossips to me, right? The gossip, that stuff gets you in trouble. And they put this little seed in your brain that about this one person, and now you're looking at them and you just don't look at them the same way. And it's pretty much, you already put this, this persona on them, and they are just, they're done. They're over. You can't be friends with them because your other friend told you about them. And I do that a lot. And that's that judgment that I'm really working on that lately, is that self-righteous stuff I've been really trying to work on, because I can get caught up in my recovery and look at all these things. I'm up here and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, man, bro, you're not even scratching the surface. Just calm your ass down, right? I'm not. And I found that out. Like, I'm telling you, like, my head just popped out of my ass. Now I could get some, right? Now I can probably start recovering the right way, because all these other times it's like I had to prove myself. I had to prove, I don't know what I was proving, to be honest with you. I had to get somewhere, and I was always like trying to one up people, and it wasn't working. It wasn't working. And luckily I do take suggestions pretty well. It just depends on who's giving the suggestions, to be honest with you. It just depends on who's giving the suggestions. But I do a good job at saying, let me look at this. If somebody says something to me about something, only because I've had experience with, I got that self-righteous thing back when I first got in recovery. And I didn't look at it because the person that gave it to me, nah, bro. Nah, I'm not self-righteous. How dare you? You know? And now that looking and I've grown some, he was absolutely right. And I sit here and I'm like, damn, bro, I really need to start taking a look at some things. And even with the messenger who's giving that message, so what? You know what I mean? It doesn't have to be a pretty bow. But if I look at something, I probably don't have to suffer as much if I actually take a look at it, understand it, and then go from there, you know? And maybe it is trash. Maybe it isn't. Who knows? But I'm in this ego mind where I'm not. You're crazy. But I'm glad that now I can take more suggestions now, because anytime I look at myself, anytime that I get that closed-mindedness, man, I'm never going to grow. And this whole life is about growing. Every year I've experienced I feel like every month lately, it's been a new form of growth, but every year there's a new me being produced. There's new experiences, new lessons. And if I'm closed-minded to the message from other people, that message might save my life. I don't know. But if I'm sitting here because of who it is, they're probably the ones that give me the most message. But I actually sat down today and was talking about the whole higher power thing. And I struggled with that for a long time. Long, long time. And because I had to put like a name on it. I need facts. I'm a factual person. I'm analytic. I need facts on some things instead of having faith. I need something that's going to hit me in the head, or a lightning bolt come out of the sky, or maybe some laser beams, or maybe some fireworks. But and it would scare me sometimes. Like I never went to church with Tiffany because I wasn't open-minded enough to hear the message of what they have. Because if you really listen, it's all the same. It's all, everything is the same, okay? There's language, the way they do it. There's different steps to do things. There's different this, that, and the other thing. But if you really think about it, the message is all the same, man. And I've gotten some good stuff out of everything. You know, I've gotten some good stuff out of AA, NA, church. I can get some stuff out of Mara. I can get everywhere. That's why the path of recovery, and they say A to Z. That's why we say that A to Z. It doesn't matter how you get there. We're all going to Z. And like that Z is the same. We're just on this path together. And who am I to judge somebody else by their path? So Yeah, man, I'm super grateful for this topic. Open-mindedness came up today when I was doing some things and some writing. I don't like writing either, Caesar. I do not like it. I don't like reading. I don't like writing. But when you do that writing, it opens that mind to try to like really sit there. You be by yourself and open your mind and jot it on paper and get it out, right? And that's something I had to work on too with writing, because I look like I have chicken scratch sometimes. Like, I might as well do it in crayon because I can't even read it half the time, but I do it anyways because my mind is open. Somebody told me to do it and he says, that's the way to do it. And that's what you're going to do. And I do it because this is what's going to save my ass down the line. And it's going to help me save somebody else's. It's going to help me help somebody to save their ass down the line. And that's what it's all about, man. It's passing it on if you're open-minded enough to receive it. So that's all we got.
But what's funny is how quick we'll listen to other people about other stuff, though. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, when we joined that group and we were getting all that new information and videos and all of this, we're like, yeah, we're going to do that. But somebody tells us, hey, you want really good recovery? You should try this. We're like, no, I know. I don't want to try that. Like any other aspect of my life, I'm completely open-minded to trying these new marketing tactics. And I'm open-minded to trying new ways to streamline my business and this and that. But somebody tells me about my recovery and I just want to snap it shut. No, I've already got recovery down pat. I'm good. I'm good now. I don't need your advice. And that's when I got to check myself, because then I'm like, oh, I'm doing that thing again. I'm in trouble. I'm running the show. I got fired from my life for poor performance as the manager. So I'm fired. I don't get to make those decisions anymore. I brought in a higher power to manage my life for me. And he's the boss. Yes, let's do it. So
somebody did.
I laugh about that. I talk about my life being unmanageable. What makes me think I can manage it any better now? I've got a whole history that shows that I'm a piss poor manager. So I'm fired and I remain fired. And the God of my understanding is the manager now.
I love it. We got new management. Sorry, we're closed for spiritual growth.
Caesar Rodriguez under new management.
Yeah, remodeling.
Construction in progress.
Yeah, it might be months. Who knows? It might be years. Who knows?
it's going to be decades, Bubba.
Yeah. All right. Good stuff tonight, guys. Yeah, Joe, again, thanks so much for coming on. I appreciate your perspective. It's always good to have some fresh perspective up in here. You know what I mean?
Heck yeah.
I hope you guys have a great week. Love y'all. Peace.